pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I'm your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Karcher. Joining me today on the show, my super friends, in the North, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman, Laird Jeff Bell.
I'm a writer.
Well, you are. You're writing at the moment, we'll keep to ourselves, but yeah. You're also a very good writer.
Yeah, but I have spent, what, 3 decades now writing for other people?
Yeah.
It's about time I grab that bull by the testes and do it myself.
Well, right. as an essayist, you are unparalleled in my eyes. So
for a white cis guy.
Yeah.
A white cis straight guy.
A white cis straight guy.
I mean, let's
who's a minority, who's still a minority.
A redhead.
Yep, you're a redhead.
I was a redhead. But, now I'm a grayhead.
Yep. The red is becoming a grayhead. The ginger is still there. We can see it. And you're a good writer. You're a very good writer.
Let me do this. I need a personal moment here at the top of the show.
Okay.
Life has been very stressful lately, and I know that that has taken a toll on me being super annoying with the fundraiser. Mm. I'm going to keep putting it out there for another couple of weeks, you know, until hopefully we can get a little bit more momentum and maybe my personal life will calm down a little bit. But I pulled into a Wendy's last night and ordered some food, and they fucked up the order on a magnitude that you would basically stick in a metropolitan IHOP in the middle of the night. It was so bad. And
wow.
I didn't say anything. I didn't like yell at him or insult him or anything, but I got really frustrated and was like, fuck, fuck, because it ended up costing me almost $20 more than I wanted to.
Ooh.
And at that particular point in the day, I really didn't have the wherewithal to sit around and let him do it over,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I was not my normal self to a frontline worker yesterday. And I feel fucking awful about it. And I don't know that this kid listens to the podcast or whatever, but maybe you guys know he's a young man, probably 17, 18 years old, working at a fucking Wendy's on 4500 South. If you know him, tell him I'm sorry. I don't. That's not me. I'm not like that. I don't do that. I'm so sorry. I feel like a dick. But, you know, I kind of let life get out in front of me for a minute, and all of a sudden I was an asshole to a fucking wage worker. I've never done that in my life. So probably when we're done recording today, I'll drive up there and see if he's working.
And say, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry I was an asshole yesterday. I really am. My personal problems in life have nothing to do with the fact that you hand me food. You didn't even cook it.
Right.
You know, so.
You handed me the wrong food, but, you know, we could have fixed that one easily.
Yeah.
Why did it cost you $20 more, though? That seems odd.
They fucked up the order and gave me more than I ordered.
Oh, I see.
So I ordered two of this thing. They gave me four, and I ordered two of that, or one of that thing, and they gave me two, and it was just like, and the guy's like, you know, blah, and I was like, that doesn't seem right.
Oh, so this was even before he handed you food. He was ringing you up.
Yeah, so I started to ponder on it. I was like, well, that was that much, and that was that much. And so he pops back, and I'm like, hey, what are you? And then he hands me three sodas instead of two, and I was like, wait. I don't have three coming. Nobody in their right mind would order three fucking Dr. Peppers. There aren't three fucking Dr. Pepper drinkers in the same room at any one time. Somebody wants a Diet Coke.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying. I don't want your garbage Dr. Pepper.
Pepper.
I want your garbage Diet Coke. Yeah, let's move on. All I'm doing is making myself come across really poorly today.
Hey, I think it speaks volumes. volumes to the fact that you owned it, you've apologized for it on the podcast, and you're going to go back over and see if the kid's working.
I am literally going to do that.
Volumes.
Yeah. It's heartening to me because I'm not that way. I'm very stern when it comes to, especially drive through. It's like if when they repeat the order back to me, if they get it wrong, I'm like, no. And it's you. I know how I sound. And when you can't see my face, I know how I sound. And I'm like, no, this is what I want. And I get very stern with them. And let me tell you, I was nearly poisoned recently.
Because you were stern?
No. I had nothing to do with the actual ordering of it. I don't eat at Arby's because I usually get sick from whatever it is they put on their food. And I'm actually allergic to, there's only one food I'm allergic to. And it's bad. It's horseradish. It actually makes my tongue swell up. And if I swallow it makes my throat swell a little bit. So I don't eat horseradish. I can eat every other vegetable in the horseradish family, apparently, because it's like broccoli and shit is in the horseradish family. And those are my favorite vegetables. But horseradish I can't handle. Anyway, I don't know if they add horseradish into other things on their menu, but the one thing I do like from Arby's is their Jamocha shakes. And I was having a craving during my current depression that you can understand why.
Yes.
You know, you work somewhere for 10 years and they suddenly just say, well, we can't afford you anymore. Get out. It's like, well, fuck you. I'm going to be sad for a while. Anyway, I asked for a Jamocha shake and Michelle was out running errands. I said, will you pick me up a Jamocha shake on your way back? She goes, yes. She comes back. She said, oh, also, they have a new BLT. And I picked that up. I you know, you can try it. I said, hey, I love BLTs. And I went and I looked on their website and it was traditional BLT. I mean, it's this brown sugar maple bacon.
Yum.
So not quite a traditional BLT, but, you know, a yummy sounding bacon. It's put on a Hawaiian King roll. I'm liking the sound of this. It's got bacon. It's got lettuce, tomato, and mayo. I'm like, that's a BLT. I go upstairs. There's the BLT waiting for me and my Jamocha shake that was like half melted because fuck me, that's why. So I start drinking my Jamocha shake and I pick up the thing and I go sit down. And I take a bite out of it. And they must have, whoever made it, must have reached over and grabbed the horsey sauce bottle that was white instead of the mayonnaise bottle. I get a mouthful of it. I'm running to spit it out. I rinse my mouth out. I still feel the swelling happening. So I go grab a Benadryl, which means I'm like, oh, it'll be nap time in a little bit. I was like, God damn it. Oh, and I'm like, I've been thinking for like 2 weeks about it, how I would have reacted if I'd been in the restaurant and taken that bite. Yeah. Just how much shit everyone would have, how much screaming everyone would have got. Although, you know, oh my goodness, I screamed at him. Oh man, it was crazy. I couldn't believe it. So yeah, I was like, uh-oh, horseradish. Haven't had horseradish for a while. Got some recently and in something else we'd ordered. And I've noticed it's a worse reaction than I used to have.
Yeah, that happens when you get older. Allergies get a little bit more aggressive.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just go away.
They exchange themselves
for a different allergy. But this one, no, definitely. And I can have wasabi.
I was wondering that as you've been talking. I'm like, what about wasabi?
Oh, I can have tons of wasabi. It's a totally different vegetable. They call it Japanese horseradish because that's what it reminded white people of when they had it.
Fucking white people.
Yeah.
We are the worst. Like, honestly.
Yeah. The plants are different. The way it's prepared is different. And it's a totally different plant. And I can eat, like, when I have sushi, I was taught by somebody who was learning about sushi at the same time I was that you take a little thing of wasabi and you mix it into your soy sauce and that's what you dip your sushi in. So you get, you know, you get a fire mouth every time you eat.
Yep. It's not bubblegum. You don't, just in case you were wondering, you don't just put a whole glob of that in your mouth.
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks. I'm glad that you clarified that for me. I've been doing it wrong this whole time.
Yeah, you don't take a little bit of it and spread it over your sushi, you know?
That's actually what I do. I take a little bit on my chopstick, and then I pick up my sushi with it.
That would work, too, because that's basically going to do the same thing. But yeah, I just mix it into the soy sauce to spice up the soy sauce. And I can have that all day long. It doesn't bother me.
Nice.
I used to be a wasabi peas guy, so yeah.
Oh, I love wasabi peas.
But yeah, it was, it's just horseradish itself. Ah! All right, let's dive into something more interesting, like the news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Toronto actor Kenneth Mitchell, who found a lot of work in television and film, even after his 2018 diagnosis of ALS, has passed away at the age of 49. You might recall him from Star Trek.
Oh yeah,
he was on a few episodes.
Yeah, he was on Discovery. He was the Klingon son of the two main Klingons, who actually looked more Klingon than they did. And he was like ran the time monastery, the time travel monastery or whatever, with the time crystals. And then later he was the engineer in the weird, he had to be in a weird wheelchair because his ALS had, so they built him some weird futuristic looking wheelchair slash walker
thing. Standing wheelchair kind of thing.
Yeah. They built him this thing to move around in, and he was this engineer in that. And it was so that they could have him in the show because they fucking loved the guy.
Yeah,
and they wanted him
working for the Orions, as I recall.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. The Orion Syndicate or whatever. No, the Jade, the Emerald Chain. That's
Emerald
what they
Chain.
Were called.
Emerald Chain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mitchell's family said in a post on his Instagram account that the actor from Star Trek Discovery and Jericho died on Saturday. For five and a half years, Ken faced a series of awful challenges from ALS, and in truest Ken fashion, he managed to rise above each one with grace and commitment to living a full and joyous life in each moment. He lived by the principles that each day is a gift, and we never walk alone. Sucks.
Yeah, I love that guy. Yeah. I did. When he would show up on Discovery, I was like, yes.
Harry Biker star Dave Myers, who had cancer, has passed away at the age of 66. One half of the cooking duo, the Harry Bikers, Myers from Barrow and Furness, found fame alongside Cy King 20 years ago. The bearded pair were known for traveling around the UK and the world on their motorcycles, sampling and cooking food from different regions. King said he will, quote, miss him every day and the bond and friendship we shared over half a lifetime. It was a fun show. I've seen that show a few times.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. And I didn't get to see as much as I wanted to because it was primarily BBC America thing. Yep. And I don't subscribe to cable. But yeah, I caught a couple of things that were out in the wild. And I was like, that's funny. Yeah.
Ramona Fraiden.
Yeah.
A comics artist best known for co-creating Metamorpho. With writer Bob Haney, known for her long-running work on Aquaman, has passed away at the age of 97 years old.
Holy
her
Hannah
death
Montana.
Was announced by comic book art dealer Catskill Comics, which again falls into this narrative. Which fucking local business, guys, are you going to have announce my death? I would say
probably Charles and Roger.
Maybe. I was thinking more like Broadway Deli.
There you go.
You know, we haven't had a sandwich order in more than a month. We have to assume that he's passed away and that it was tragic. He was a good customer, you know.
What's that bakery? Fillings and Emulsions?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they'll be announcing your passing because that's one of your favorites as well. Yeah.
Hey, everybody, we have baguettes. Jeff died. Anyway, this place that sold her shit announced that it comes with great sadness to announce that Ramona Fraiden has passed away a few moments ago. Her art dealer was in the room. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Ramona was 97, had a long career in the comic book industry, and was still drawing just a few days ago. She was a remarkable person.
Or she was doing a signing at their store. I don't know.
Yeah, something. Maybe that was where she passed away.
Yeah.
yeah, I will miss the great conversations and laughs we had. I'm blessed that I was able to work with her on a professional level, but also able to call her my friend. If anyone who wishes to send a card to the family, please feel free to send them to Catskill Comics, and I'll be happy to pass them along.
She was
another one of those silent groundbreakers in comics, drawing, working as an artist, comic book artist in the Silver Age, and Bronze Age because of Metamorpho and stuff. So yeah, she was a big deal. It was a big deal, you know.
Well, we talked about
you just forget about. Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about last month the fact that she was retiring.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And again, this is the thing that don't retire, it'll kill you. Find a hobby ASAP. Richard Lewis, comedian and Curb Your Enthusiasm star, is dead at 76. And not for nothing, he looked like he was in his 90s.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what he had.
Go ahead.
He had whatever that is that's getting
Parkinson's.
Michael J. Fox. Parkinson's
disease, announced
it
last April.
Him. Yeah.
Yep. Said he was retiring from comedy, but he most recently appeared in season 12 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, currently airing on HBO. In 2021, Richard Lewis announced that he wouldn't appear in season 11 of Curb Your Enthusiasm in order to recover from three surgeries. He surprised viewers by returning to set for one season 11 episode, telling Variety at the time, "When I walked in and they applauded, I felt like $1 million. Larry doesn't like to hug, and he hugged me and told me he was happy. He was after we shot our scene."
Aww.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always liked him. He's always made me laugh. He's not in my top five, but he's always been pretty fucking close to it. You know,
right. For sure.
The self-abusive comedy's mm-hmm. never been one of my favorites, but he was so fucking good at it that I really, really enjoyed his work. And I'm sad that he's dead.
He's one of those comedians that I discovered as a stand-up first, because he got stand-up specials early on. And then he got like Robin Hood Men in Tights, and he got what was that show he did, Anything But Love, and back in the day, that sitcom, and all that was just, I mean, he was so good, and I was like, this, I love the guys. So yeah,
it's sad. Nick Offerman won himself a statue.
Oh,
and decided to address
dead.
What's that?
I said I'm glad he's not dead.
Yeah,
jeez,
it's pretty much what news is anymore. But anyway, he won himself a statue at some such or another and decided that he would take issue with the haters who have taken issue with his role in season 1, episode 3 of HBO's The Last of Us. Offerman won the award for Best Supporting Performance in a new scripted series at Sunday's Film Independent Spirit Awards, where he took the opportunity to address some of the bigoted criticism he says he's received about the episode. He thanked HBO for having the guts to participate in the storytelling tradition that is truly independent. He said, stories that when homophobic hate comes my way and says, why did you have to make it a gay story? We say, because you ask questions like that. It's not a gay story. It's a love story, you asshole. He added that he hopes to see, quote, more of that, end quote, representation, before thanking the showrunners, his family, and hilariously, my bride, my puzzle coach, and my legal property, Megan Mullen.
I love him. Oh God, I love him so much.
Yep. Yep, he is great. And I appreciate pretty much everything he's done. Even though I'm not a big Parks and Rec fan.
Right.
You know?
Same. Oh, yeah.
If an episode's on, I can watch it and have a giggle, but for the most part, you know, I'm just Owen came and went. I just really didn't pay much mind. But he's fucking great in it. He's fucking great in everything he does.
Yeah.
I always said about Parks and Rec, I went back and watched it after I got my government job, and it was so much funnier.
Yep.
yes.
and, And Nick Offerman as a libertarian is absolutely hilarious because he's just mocking the fuck. And yet there are so many people who are like, oh, we like this guy. And I'm like, you don't get that he's making fun of you, do you?
He is. But that, as they say, is it for the news.
All right, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're talking moving pictures.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Tell me. There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
All right, what you guys been watching on the TVs this week, Joss?
Ooh. I watched Lucy. Did you guys watch that? Like a couple of years ago it came out with Scarlett Johansson?
I did. I like that movie. It's weird.
It was really weird, but I was also very intrigued. It kept me entertained the whole time. So yeah, I really kind of liked that one. I did yet another rewatch. I wasn't feeling great yesterday, just kind of blah. I think, you know, the massive winter storm didn't help me. So I put on The Marvels again because I love it. I think The Marvels might be my new go-to for when I don't know what else to watch. Because I love that movie so much. It's so delightful. That fight scene where they're swapping out.
Yeah.
Killer. Killer. So then I also, after I watched the movie, I turned on The Assembled, the behind the scenes making of. Mm-hmm. I was even more blown away. Even more blown away.
I forgot. I need to watch that.
You do.
It is so good.
So good. So good. So yeah. And then my other, like, and I don't know how, I'm just going to call it out. It's one of my very favoriteest Marvel movies, which is Captain America Civil War, because that is my go-to sick movie. Like if I'm not feeling great, I'm putting on Civil War because it just, I don't know why, it just was such a great movie and I love it. So I spent yesterday lounging on my couch with my blanket, watching Marvel movies. It was a great day. It was a great day. How about you guys? What'd you watch, Jeff?
I had a busy week, basically because didn't go anywhere and do anything. I did, however, manage to leave the house and go and see Argyle.
Oh, how was that?
It was not what you think.
Oh.
It was, no, okay. No, it wasn't bad. I actually enjoyed the hell out of it. And, you know, Sam Rockwell, I don't give a shit, man. That dude pops up, I'm entertained.
Every time. Yep.
Does not disappoint. And he's been so ferociously typecast.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't care. I fucking love it. Henry Cavill looks odd in a suit. Just throwing that out there. He's just so fucking big. You know, you put him in a suit, he looks like a bodyguard. Bryce Dallas Howard was an inspiration. The CGI cat should be yet another thing they hang on the wall at Warner Brothers Discovery to remind themselves how shitty The Flash was.
And it's funny, a lot of critics have panned the CGI cat, and I'm like, I don't know, it still looks better than those fucking babies in The Flash.
Well, there's a few things that happen to that cat that you can't do to a real cat.
Exactly.
So of course it's got to be CGI, and of course it doesn't look perfect, but it looks way better than The Flash did. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sad that it's doing so shitty in the box office. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. That I don't think it's going to get a sequel that I so richly want to see.
And this was the movie where we actually talked about this on the show. The author had been given like $10 million for the movie before, and the book hadn't even come out yet.
Yeah, and it's
$10 million for the book. Yeah,
it's been on the shelf for a couple of years now.
Yeah,
I saw an interview with of all people, John Cena, in which Dua Lipa was like, "Oh no, he's my emotional support actor." Because we've done two movies together and he's always been there and been my friend. And the reporter was like, oh yeah, which movies did you do? And she's, you know, like, I think it's, is it Dune? No. Oh, Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get those two mixed up. Their color coordination and so on. Anyway, then Barbie, and she was the mermaid next to Cena's merman.
Yeah.
And then she played the sort of the big muscle backup guy to Henry Cavill's Argyle, and it turns out they shot Argyle well before Barbie.
Yeah.
And I did not know that. So it's been sitting around for a while and it finally came out. I think it would have been a better summer release, personally. You know, it's big and goofy and people don't expect a lot of emotional depth like you get when you deliver in December.
Well, you know, they didn't make the, they decided not to make the mistake that Marvel made with the Marvels and tried to do it after when the actors would be available to talk about the movie so that they could get it promoted. But I haven't seen much promotion on the movie from actors apart from, you know, just the initial trailers and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't watch many of the talk shows, so I don't know if Henry Cavill was out on the talk show circuit. But I don't know that he was. Yeah.
I don't watch any of them, so.
Yeah. Where else did we get? I'm finally watching Stranger Things.
Oh. Okay.
About halfway through season two. I mean, I love David Harbour. I mean, I really do. The kids are great. Winona's fine. You know, it's David Harbour that's making this show for me. I gotta be honest. You know, what else? Oh, dropout.tv, which is the subscription for $5 a month that you absolutely should have if you're not a wanker. Another episode of Game Changer came out on Friday. Got to watch that here a couple days ago. Oh my god, I can't talk about how much I love this fucking show. You know, and there's six fucking seasons to watch. It is worth the $5. And then you just start to explore in the other goofy shit these guys are putting together. It is some groundbreaking fucking entertainment. You know, dropout.tv. It's $5 a month. Yeah, I know it's another subscription service, but this one's different and cool. And then After Midnight is back. And in my head canon, she was sick last week because she's got a much deeper, slightly congested voice this week.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's my headcanon as well.
So what about you, sir?
Speaking of After Midnight, yeah, I watched that all week along with The Daily Show. God damn, I feel like, you know, it's 20 years ago and I'm watching Comedy Central again. and I'd forgotten how much I missed at midnight, watching After Midnight, because it's just so fucking entertaining. And it is threatening to give me asthma attacks every time I watch it. Because, you know, Jeff has often said on these podcasts that I have a fake laugh. And he's right. I do. Because my actual laugh is more like Muttley from the cartoons. It's the breathy laugh. And I will sit there laughing like that until my asthma kicks in. Yeah. After Midnight is so damn funny. I am just laughing that hard on it. So yeah, I did After Midnight. What else did we watch this week? Resident Alien's back, so we've been watching that. You know, this wouldn't be that great of a show if it wasn't for Alan Tudyk. That's all there is to it. It's so much fun. He makes the show. He carries that show. Of course, he's the lead, so he needs to. He's now the producer on the show. So he's basically making damn sure it stays on, you know, keeps its quality up and stays on Sci-Fi, who constantly threatens to cancel anything if it isn't wrestling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's keeping that one going. And then last night, we decided to check out the first episode of Avatar, The Last Airbender on Netflix. This is the live action one. Dear M. Night Shyamalan, that's how you do it right there. God, I get it. I've been in those kind of situations where you forget. You're in that moment working with actors and they're bringing something unique. And you just want to keep working with them on that, but you don't realize that you're not serving the audience by allowing Aang, the happy-go-lucky Aang, to be morose and depressed the entire fucking movie. You are not serving the audience with that. So yeah, this one, fucking great performances, great casting. Paul, what's his name? Paul Sung Lee or something. You might know him from either Kim's Convenience, which is a very funny show. If you have not watched Kim's Convenience, it's a Canadian sitcom and it is delightful. It's also where I first met Simu Liu. But yeah, he was Mr. Kim and he is fucking hilarious. And then you may also, those more people who, because more people have watched The Mandalorian than Kim's Convenience, unless you live in Canada, more people have watched The Mandalorian and The Mandalorian. He is the X-Wing pilot who's been in every single season of Mandalorian. That Asian X-Wing pilot. So that's he's playing Uncle Iroh. And he's fucking perfect in the role.
I love it.
They did cast a First Peoples girl to play Katara because she's supposed to be kind of they were supposed to be kind of Inuit. So they cast her. And then they grabbed a. I was going through the cast list because I was like, okay, let's make sure we see who's in it. If there's anybody else I recognize, Amber Midthunder will be playing the princess that'll be showing up at the end of the season. Oh. I know this because I've watched the first series of Avatar: The Last Airbender like a million times. So yeah, the princess who shows up at the end, who turns into fish, spoiler alert, she is going to be played by Amber Midthunder.
She was in Predator.
What's that?
She was in the Predator movie, right?
Yeah, the latest Predator movie called Prey. She was the main character in that. She was, of course, also in Legion, which was such a delightful series. Yeah, that's where I first encountered Amber Midthunder. And she even had a fun little cameo in Reservation Dogs, which, of course, she would, because they pretty much brought every First Peoples actor into Reservation Dogs at some point. So, and she was delightful in that. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And just off the first episode, this is wonderful. It's 8 episodes for the first season. And it looks, and just reading through the episode descriptions, it's hitting all the highlights of the first series from the animation.
Nice.
So I'm sure it will cover quite a bit of what happened. There are a few things I was like, I don't remember that happening. I could be wrong. That may have happened. I don't remember it. And I'm like, or they could have added it and it enhances it one way or the other. So, there are some great moments, his avatar moments. Oh, his tattoo. The arrow tattoo on his forehead is more than just a big blue arrow. It's got like little designs in it. And when he goes into his avatar state, they light up first. It's such a cool little effect when they light up first and everything. And yeah, it's a really cool, show. Can't wait to get back to it and watch some more. But yeah, that's what I've watched this week. And with that said, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
The Brother's Son canceled by Netflix after one season. And if my viewing habit of it is any indication of anybody else's, that's why. I made about halfway through. Took a break because I was tired and have just not come back to it. I loved it. It was funny. I enjoyed it. But I had no draw. So I only got about 4 episodes in. And then I was like, meh.
It's on my list of things I wanted to see, wanted to sit down and watch, and just never made the time for it. And I think a lot of people felt that way.
Yeah.
It was one of those where I'm like, ooh, I must watch this. I must see what this looks like. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that sucks. But, you know, season one was still pretty good. So I'll go back and finish it. Argylle set for imminent streaming debut after bombing in theaters. Matthew Vaughn's spy action comedy film got confirmation of its planned digital release date following its box office run. Argylle is slated to become available for purchase digitally on March 5th, 32 days after the movie was released theatrically on February 2nd. Yeesh. Anyway, Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard, John Cena, Dua Lipa, Sam Rockwell, Samuel L. Jackson, fucking everybody was in this goddamn thing. And I think you probably ought to go see it before it's out of theaters because there's some pretty cool shit. X-Files creator Chris Carter has given Ryan Coogler his blessing for an X-Files series reboot. Quote,
"Oh,
he's got some good ideas," end quote.
Sweet.
I love it.
I'm here. I'm there for it.
Yep.
Now, Coogler was part of that J.J. Abrams group, wasn't he?
I think so. I think that's how he made it to Marvel anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm all for it. An X-Files reboot, especially now where the government has admitted to the existence of UFOs.
Right.
this flips the whole X-Files thing on its ear. It won't be one guy in a basement, it would be a whole team now.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah, I like that this quote from Chris Carter. Asking if he'd be part of the X-Files reboot. He says, "I wouldn't, only as a cheerleader. They don't need my blessing. 20th Century Fox and Disney owns the show. They're free to do with it what they believe. I'm honored that they came to me and asked, not for my permission, but for my blessing." Mm-hmm. They said, "Have you spoken to Coogler about it?" He's like, "I'm not supposed to be talking about it, according to Disney, but I'll tell you, yeah, I've had a conversation with him." So I like that.
I'm not going to tell you all his plans, but yeah, we've talked.
Look, this next article. It's a lot of math,
mm-hmm.
You know, not just numerical math, but people destroying good things to make more money kind of math.
Mm-hmm.
So Warner Brothers Discovery earned $103 million last year, but it cost them $16 billion to do it.
This is how you make investors happy. No, but we profited $103 million after spending $16 billion. Yeah.
But yeah, they apparently lost $2.1 billion back in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've managed to turn that around just a little bit.
Well, yeah. Good.
Yeah. No new plans for the 2024 fiscal year were announced, so who knows what things they might destroy in an effort to gain more profitability. But look, it's an interesting article. It's just hard to have a discussion about because it's a thing mm-hmm. that doesn't matter what my opinion is. So pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com, click on this one, read through it for yourself. It's interesting. And it just makes me think I would be really good at spending money to make money. Huh?
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
I could be a corporate CEO.
Yeah, you could.
Yep.
I agree.
Original Top Gun star sues Paramount over the use of his likeness in Top Gun Maverick. Actor Barry Tubb, known for his role as Wolfman in mm-hmm. the original Top Gun, has taken legal action against Paramount over the use of his likeness in the scene.
Wolfman was the one always in the cowboy hat. That's
yep.
Right.
I always think, which one was Wolfman? Oh, he was cowboy hat pilot. That's right. Yeah.
The scene in question includes a photograph featuring Tubbs' original character alongside Maverick, Goose, and Iceman.
Yeah.
I think...
Like, that's drawing this, like, I don't know.
I think Barry is broke and is trying to find a way to pay his bills because I understand this level of desperation. Mm-hmm. This is a picture of you, dude. I'm sorry.
Yep.
But I am pretty sure you signed contracts that said they could do something like that with your image from that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if it wasn't in your contract, it's going to, I don't know that he'll win. He might get a settlement, but I don't know that he'll win. Yeah. If they took it all the way.
Well, and I mean, the movie's already been sued once by the original 1983
author, right?
Yeah.
The author of the book.
Article.
Yeah, he sued them for copyright infringement, seeking an injunction against the sequel's distribution, to which the court went, no.
No, they own Top Gun.
Yep.
Sorry, dude. You wrote an article. Well done, you.
So in what I find as very good news, Roadhouse, Jake Gyllenhaal's Roadhouse, is going straight to Amazon Prime in March. And the director kind of lost his fucking cool about it and was like, I was promised a theatrical release. And then they talked to Jake Gyllenhaal and he's like, nah, they always said it was going straight to streaming. I'm sorry.
It's going straight.
I'd love for it to be out there, but hey, this gets to the most people the quickest way possible, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, according to the lawsuit, Hill filed a petition with the U.S. Copyright Office in 2021 for the rights to revert to him when United Artists' claim expired in November of 2023. Hill also claims that he was ignored by Amazon, arguing that the company had used AI to replicate the voices of actors during the SAG-AFTRA strike so production could continue, ideally beat the November 10th deadline. The lawsuit also noted that the movie still did not finish production until January of 2024, months after the deadline passed. Side-by-side plot points for both movies were also included in the complaint to allege copyright infringement. I got a feeling Amazon's got their shit together with the paperwork on this. I just have a feeling.
Probably. I mean, probably.
You know,
I'm trying to figure out. They CGI'd the voices of the original cast. Is that what he's alleging? Or they AI'd the voices of the original cast, or is it the current cast?
I think it's the current cast, because he's saying that they did it during the writer's strike.
Oh, well, if the film was shot, you know, all principal photography was done, all principal sound was recorded, so they got the sound done before the SAG-AFTRA strike, you know, then they can do whatever they want at that point. Yeah. I hate to say it. I mean, it sucks, but they can do whatever they want, dude. So, yeah.
Yep. The lawsuit stated on November 11, 2023, the screenplay's copyright, thereby duly reverted to Hill under the Copyright Act, yet in contravention of the Act's fundamental authorial termination right, defendants refused to acknowledge Hill's statutory termination. Instead, defendants steamrolled ahead with production of a remake of the 1989 film derived from Hill's screenplay. Don't care. Gonna watch it.
So Hill was actually working on this until Amazon's like, "Well, you just get the fuck out. You're disrupting everything. You're fired." Because yep. He was probably like, "Hey, I want to do. You know, you got to do this. This is what we want to do." And they're like, "Dude, it's 2024. We don't want to do 1980s stuff anymore." Yeah.
I don't know. Did you either of you guys watch the trailer for this?
Yeah,
it looks fucking great. Yeah. It looks like I'm going to get exactly what I want from it.
Yeah,
you know.
So I don't know that I'll love it as much as the original, because the original is always one of my favorite guilty pleasure movies. But I do know why you like it, and it's right at the beginning, right at the beginning of the trailer. He just walks up and he's sitting there with these three guys giving him shit, and he slaps this guy just hard. And he's like, "What? I slapped you.
You gonna be okay? You gonna cry?"
Which is exactly how this giant redhead over here used to bounce.
It's true. It is.
I have not. And I watched a clip that somebody threw up on YouTube from Reacher that I forgot from the first season, where he just bitch slapped a guy in the restaurant. In the first season of Reacher.
Yeah.
And again, I was thinking, man, all these big guys slapping people, that just always makes me think of Jeff.
You punch somebody, you might kill them. You can't go running around punching people when you're that big.
Yeah.
Right.
And besides, it is psychologically unsettling to be slapped as hard as most people get punched and to have it make that little noise. Oh, yeah, it was a secret weapon I had.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it for the news, gang.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're talking comics.
I'm Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah! All right, let's dive into some comic book news.
Comic book news it is.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Alan Moore's last comic will be published in 2024. Alan Moore has been saying for a while that he plans to leave comics behind, and now it seems we know his final project. Recently, Top Shelf Productions and Knockabout Limited announced the publication date of the long-awaited comics prose album, The Moon and the Serpent, a bumper book of magic. Okay.
I mean, I know I'm going to read it.
This is the product of a years-long creative partnership between Moore and his creative and magical mentor, Steve Moore. No relation. Top Shelf characterizes the book as a celebration of magic, and the occult has been meticulously under development for nearly two decades. It is brought to life through a combination of prose, illustration, and sequential art from five incredible authors. The Moon and Serpent Bumper Book of Magic will be on sale in October of 2024.
Nice. Does Alan Moore have any hobbies? Do we know?
Being angry?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that when you retire, you die. So I'm just wondering if we're going to have an obit in November of 2020.
I believe that his hate will see him through.
Okay, good.
Because that man does not like.
Well, you know, some people just don't.
He is. He's the one where they hand him the bowl of life cereal and he goes, no.
Not to mention the fact the wizard that lives in his beard has just been keeping his body animated for decades. So. When the wizard in his beard dies, that's a whole different story.
Oh, but, dear. Yeah. All right. Good to know.
On the other end of the spectrum, and by spectrum, I'm pretty sure I mean spectrum.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Josh Gad will make his comics writing debut with a new Dark Horse comic. The Frozen star will soon make his comics debut thanks to a book called The Writer. A new series set for release by Dark Horse Comics later this summer. According to the publisher, The Writer will be a meditake on writing that combines creative processes with popular folklore tales. So he's teaming up with the brilliant Berkowitz brothers on The Writer. He says, it's been an absolute blast and an education. Here we are, diving headfirst into a universe where cultural folklore meets the high-octane adventures that defined our youth. It's like all those Saturdays spent watching action flicks and dreaming up stories are finally paying off. What makes this project truly special, though, is the chance to celebrate personal stories. We're talking about tales not only entertain, but resonate on a deeper... Anyway, it just goes on and on and on. As though he were a writer. And being paid by the word.
Yes.
So, The Writer isn't just a comic, he says, because it just goes on and on. It's a milestone for nerds like us, proving heroes come in all shapes, sizes, and backgrounds. Can't wait for you all to see what we have in store.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll give her a go. You know?
That's cool. Yeah.
It is. We'll see. It's got a bit of an R.L. Stein feel to it, but whatever.
I would expect nothing less from Josh Gad, though.
Yeah. Hope it's funny.
Yep.
Anyway, that's it for the comic book news.
All right, well, let's talk about what we've been reading this week. Jess, what comics have you got?
So I said last week that I was going to sit down with my stack of At the End, or Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, from Jason Aaron, and I did. And I read 12 issues, and oh my gosh, I've been missing out this whole time because this book has been delightful. I did not expect it to go the way that it has gone. But I can't wait. There's only actually going to only be like three more issues and then it's done. So, yeah, I can't wait to see how they're going to end it. But it's interesting. They set it up as like a book one, book two, book three, and they've had a different art team on each of these books. So that's been interesting to see the different styles progress.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really good. It's a really good one. If you're not reading it, you should be. And I'm sure it's out. I'm sure the first two trades are out. Mm-hmm. I would imagine. So, yeah, pick it up. Read it. It's real good. Real good.
Good.
What about you, Jeff?
Well, I'm in a bit of a brag.
Please.
Polish my apple. I read two books that won't be available for weeks yet.
Oh.
I read Feral, number one, number two, and number three.
Oh, wow.
Feral is from the same gang that brought you Stray Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
This one is about cats and the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, I'm in.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
It is good. Oh, my God, it's good. It was so much fun to read. You can order it now. Call your local comic book shop. My personal preference would be that you call Dr. Volts at 801-485-6114 and have this added to your hold. Don't have a hold, you say? Get one. It's a matter. How are you listening to this? You don't have a hold. That's so weird. Anyway, 801-485-6114. Email, smoke signal, carrier pigeon. I don't give a shit. Get Feral on your list. It is better than Stray Dogs so far.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And Stray Dogs was top fucking notch. And keep in mind, I don't like cats. I don't like this whole series from one of my favorite authors because there's talking cats in it. And this one, the cats all talk, and I'm like, I'm enchanted.
I love it.
The other title is called Uncanny Valley. I left it at the shop for Braxton to read, or I'd show you the thing. But basically, this boy is he does a dumb thing. He jumps off a bridge because his friends did. And they both broke their leg, a leg, and he didn't. So that's your first cause of concern. The best part about it is this is when he's hanging out with his mom, and she's like, you jumped off a bridge because your friends did? What kind of a cliche are you? And like that, but it turns out that his grandfather is a cartoon, and he's a half-breed. And so the powers of cartoon bad guy-dom, we haven't really figured out who the bad guys are yet in this one, are after him. And the end of the book has this adorable fucking twist that you're just like, wait, what? It's yeah, and that one is also, I believe, available to order now at your local comic book shop. Feral and Uncanny Valley both have, I believe, Tony Fleeks involved. But it was fun. It was fun. I don't usually get all exercised about advanced reader's copies, but in this case, I am. So, what'd you read this week?
Not advanced reader stuff. But we did get to issue 6 of Star Trek Picard's Academy. Holy shit. Man, that was terrible. just not a good book, in my opinion. And the twist at the end actually made me angry. Yeah.
Oh, no.
There's been this smart-ass voiceover all the way through the book that I was attributing to Picard. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I find out it's actually this other character, and then they reveal who the other character really is, and I got even more pissed about it. So yeah, it's not that great. It'll be out in trade soon. I don't know. I don't recommend it. It just wasn't that good. What was good was Invincible Iron Man number 15. I wish they would get their covers in the right order, because this is the debut of Tony's new Mysterium armor. You know, his unobtainium armor, as it were. And holy shit, does that armor look good. And the reveal was absolutely perfect. And then what it actually does at the end, I won't spoil, but it was even cooler. So I love Iron Man. If you love Iron Man as well and you're not picking it up, this one, maybe grab this one. Just know that he's helping the X-Men deal with this whole Sentinel problem, because the dude who built the latest round of Sentinels had bought his company and was using Stark Tech to take it all from him. Finally, Women of Marvel, number one. This is multiple authors, not just Gail Simone, like Fresh Comics would have had us believe. The Gail Simone story is the very first one and is fucking delightful, because there's this dude who is basically kidnapping all the women of Marvel from various moments in their comic adventures. And then everybody's forgotten that they ever existed. Like, the first one kidnapped is Sue Storm, and the guys come attacking and they're like, they're now the Fantastic Three instead of the Fantastic Four. There's a moment where Aunt May disappears, and it was like, oh, Petey loves my wheat cakes. And then the next scene is oh, Uncle Ben, thanks for breakfast. He's like, hey, plain porridge is good for you, Petey. all the way through, it's like this guy's, and he's kidnapping him. He's like, and the whole thing is like, Sue Storm is like, well, it sounds like a what if. He's like, it's not a what if. It's not a what if. This is just Gail Simone at her finest. And ripping on every one of these fuckwits on the internet. In fact, the one at by the end of the story, Sue says, "You haven't told us why you did all this," and you get an ellipsis, and he says, "I've been online a lot lately." great little Scarlet Witch story, fun Black Widow story. What else we got? Just some catch up on some different characters. A great story with Madam Web, just in time for the new movie. And yeah, there's like a one pager for Squirrel Girl that didn't make much sense, but I'll let them have it. Overall, a great effort this year for Women of Marvel. I really enjoyed it. And like I said, the Gail Simone story at the first is worth the cost of the book. I mean, it's a $5.99 book. It shouldn't be for how, you know, it should be thicker for being $5.99, in my opinion. But it's just a Gail Simone story, in my opinion, is worth the $6. Seriously. It was that funny. It was that delightful.
Nice.
So that's what I have read. But today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. It's time to give our picks of the week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, what are you looking forward to next week, Joss? Start us out.
So let's go mainstream, just because for funsies. Miss Marvel, mm-hmm. Mutant Menace number one. Miss Marvel officially has come out to the world as a mutant and a member of the X-Men. I'll be honest, not sure how I feel about that. I really struggle with X-Men titles, but Iman Vellani is writing this, and I, for no other reason, even if I hate this book, I'm going to pick it up because I love Iman Vellani, and I want her to be happy. And by buying her book, I will make her happy. I just know it. I just know it.
She'll give that cute little ooh moment.
I know. She's just so adorable. I just want to pick her up and put her in a little box and keep her safe from all of the mean incels in the world. Mm-hmm. I just need her protected, you guys. So that's obviously going on my list. But then also, there is a trade paperback coming out. It is Daredevil Underboss. This is actually collecting Daredevil Ninja from 2000 and Daredevil, a couple of Daredevil issues in the main run that were all written by Brian Michael Bendis. And they predate my interest in comic books. Well, my interest in Daredevil specifically. And so I'm going to add that onto, I may not pick it up. I may add it to my birthday list and give my mom that hint. Because, you know, she's up in the area once a week and send her in to pick it up for my birthday.
There you go.
Yeah. So I like a good Daredevil collection. And I've always liked Brian Michael Bendis. And I don't know why I haven't ever gone back to read these. Probably because I can't keep up on my current issues.
Mm-hmm.
So going back in time is not ever going to be a great option for me. How about you, Jeff? What are you picking up mainstream this week?
Well, from Marvel, I'm picking up Ultimate X-Men. Here's the thing. All this Ultimate shit is basically being driven by fucking Hickman. And Hickman's the reason that I quit reading the X-Men in the first place. So we'll have to see how it goes. But all of these other fucking Ultimate titles have worked out really well. And so I'm kind of excited for it. It'd be nice to be able to have an X-Men title that I fucking understand what's going on back on my plate.
Right.
I say yes, and this is Peach Momoko.
Yep.
This is worth it to check out. Peach Momoko is amazing. Yes.
Yep. And then The Batman with a hyphen. Mm-hmm. First Night number one. The year is 1939. The world still reeling from the horrors of the First World War is on the brink of tipping into an even more gruesome conflict, and fascism is on the march, gathering strength in America's darkest corners. And everybody knows the darkest corner in America is Gotham City at night.
Ooh.
Enter the Bat-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Dan Jurgens writing a What If and Elseworlds Batman. So what the fuck's not to want? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Anyway, that's my mainstream. What about you, sir?
Yeah, that one's also on my list for this week, because holy shit, I can't wait for that. For Marvel, Avengers number 11. So we've kind of had a reboot of the Avengers after the Jason Aaron years, right? He wrote Avengers for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. So we've had this little bit of a reboot. They're now living up on a floating city that orbits the Earth. And they could use a little homey touch on this in this new place they're living in. So of course they call in the one guy, the great support of the Avengers' greatest support, the Alfred to the Avengers, Jarvis. So this book features Jarvis finally returning to the fold of the Avengers, which I'm very excited about. And then from DC Comics. We get Shazam number 9. I'm excited about this strictly because the Creeper is returning. And he kind of got done a little bit of a dirty by Tom King when he did his last maxi series for DC Black Label. But I'm hoping this one will be a little better because I did not like the Creeper being basically an Ayn Rand level conspiracy theorist. And I would like to see him come back as a more interesting character. Yes, I know the Creeper was also created by an Ayn Rand conspiracy theorist. I don't need that. I don't want the question to be an Ayn Rand conspiracy theorist anymore. I don't need the Creeper to be an Ayn Rand conspiracy theorist. Let it die. And hopefully, Mark Waid will make this all better. We'll see.
Oh, he absolutely will. I love Mark Waid.
Yes. For my indie picks from Oni Press, it's weird for me to pick an Oni Press book, but this one is Night People. This is taking a Barry Gifford collection of stories and turning them into a comic book series. Barry Gifford, he created Wild at Heart. He was the co-writer of Lost Highway. He wrote like he writes about dark things going on kind of down in the South, you know, the dark deeds of people. And Night People is basically neon lit Southern nights give way to lipstick, sweat, and blood, and the odd, innocent, and evil are all fellow travelers down an interstate of dark, elusive dreams. And Chris Condon, who wrote That Texas Blood and the Enfield Gang Massacre, is basically adopting this. And you get a rotating cast of different artists every week as they follow these four stories about interlocking tales of wanted criminals, cartel killers, and lost souls. And it's going from New Orleans to Egypt City, Florida, and back again. So deep South stuff. Looks like fun. And then from Panini Comics, and I'm kind of hoping you've ordered this one into Volts, Jeff. Doctor Who, The White Dragon. This is a trade that is basically collecting some comic strip adventures with Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, the 13th Doctor. And it looks like it's got some kung fu stuff going on in it, and I want to read it. So, I want to read this thing. It got some behind-the-scenes stuff, which that's fine, but I'm more interested in the whole kung fu aspect of it, so... Doctor Who, The White Dragon, coming out as a trade from Panini Press. So that's my picks. What are your indie picks, Jeff?
Indie picks, pretty easy. Void Rivals, Kirkman's new gig, is putting out its first trade this week with Void Rivals Volume 1. If you were wondering about it or interested in the Energon universe at all, this is a really good way to come into it. It eases in sideways, as it were. So anyway, looking forward to that. And then also from 2000 AD, The Crimson Sea. The Crimson Sea is basically a collection of short stories done by Fred Baker, Donny Avnell, Alf Wallace. And just looks like a really good throwback to, it sounds kind of like the old Classics Illustrated stuff, you know, war stories told in the exciting pages of comic books sort of thing.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I like it.
That looks nice. Good. What about you, buddy?
I am slightly behind on this series, but Crave number 4 is coming out. The first two issues were fantastic. I haven't read 3 yet, but they need a landline to call Kai, because they were shocked. David, Alexandria, Albert, and Sophia were shocked by the events of the previous issue. I haven't read it, so I'm not shocked yet. But they need a landline, so they take refuge with Alex's friend Dega, an eccentric fetish fashion designer and terrorist. Kai reveals some shocking truths about Crave, and they make a plan to stop the app. Ooh, intriguing. I'm all in. I like it. I'm gonna read number 3, and then I'm gonna get down and pick up number 4 this week. And that's it for my picks.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, let's jump into our TARDIS and head to the month of May and give our picks of the future. All right, what's your future pick, Jess?
My future pick this week is coming from Image Comics and Scotty Young, called Ain't No Grave. It's a short series, 1 of 5. This is a double-length first issue. Writer put her violent past behind her when she fell in love and became a mother. But that was before she learned it was all going to be taken away. Now she'll have to pick up her guns once again and ride to kill the one who's behind the threat, which happens to be death. So she's going to go up against an epic battle with death. And I'm here for it. How about you, Jeff?
Universal Monsters Dracula is coming out in hardcover. Looks like this thing's going to drop April 22nd. January, February, March, April, May. May 15th. FOC date, April 22nd. It's Bob Kirkman calls it the Dracula comic he's wanted all his life. So
it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And if you miss the individual issues, definitely pick it up. I got all the individual issues. I'm probably still going to pick up the hardcover because it was so fucking good. Yeah.
Yep. What about you?
For me, from Marvel, I'm looking forward to Get Fury, number one. It's a 5-issue limited series by Garth Ennis. And you know I love the Ennis. Jason Burroughs. And it's 1971. There's a war raging in Vietnam, and Nick Fury has been captured by the Viet Cong. At this moment, they don't quite understand that they have in their possession a man who knows enough secrets to damage the United States beyond comprehension. The CIA, however, does realize this, and they can't risk their enemy getting those secrets, so they dispatch the most deadly man in the U.S. Army, Lieutenant Frank Castle. So we're going back to the good old, you know, the early days of Marvel, the Vietnam War kind of stuff, and we got Fury meets the Punisher. This is White Nick Fury, by the way, not Black Nick Fury. So this is White Nick Fury meets the Punisher.
I always put it as regular Nick Fury versus Ultimate Nick Fury.
Well, except that they did a thing in 616 where Nick Fury had a son with a African-American woman who then grew up, and his name is also Nicholas. He was named Nicholas, but he had a different last name, and then he changed his name to Nicholas Fury. And he's black and bald with a goatee and wears an eye patch like his old man. So, yeah, and, you know, just like Sam Jackson. So, yeah, Ultimate Nick Fury became the regular Nick Fury as the son of White Nick Fury. So that's why I always say White Nick Fury. The old Sergeant Fury, only this is, yeah, he'd be, I don't know that he'd be a colonel yet, but yeah, this was definitely Vietnam War Nick Fury.
Nice.
And that's it. So anything else this week, kids?
Just want to remind. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wanted to point out that Kelly Sue DeTonic on her Instagram brought this to my attention. Hashtag visiblewomen.work is celebrating women in comics all month long. They are going to do a daily blog highlighting different women that have worked in comics throughout all the years. So I think it's awesome. They are working to take this from just being a hashtag to actually being a nonprofit. I haven't had a chance to research exactly what their plans are for that nonprofit, but I am all for increasing the visibility of the women that have helped shape our comic books, because we had, you know, there's been lots of them, and they tend to get overlooked. So go check that out. Jeff?
If anything, it'd be keeping the classic artists and writers like Ramona Freyden, who we just talked about, this episode, from basically dying. I don't know that she's dying in poverty, but, you know, because we know of plenty of comic book creators who are basically in poverty because there was no protections for them.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and it looks like Kelly Sue actually wrote the very first blog entry for the month, which was on Nina Albright. So, check that out. There you go. So check that out. I think it's a good thing for Women History Month.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Jeff?
You get a whole month?
We do. We get a whole month.
And it's not a February?
We got March. We get 31 days. I don't think that's fair. I think Black History Month should get, like, I think it should just be Black History Year, and let's all learn about that. But
yeah, I'm with you.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I just want to remind people that we're doing the fundraiser to try and get a studio built out. You pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and just click right there and help us out. I'll talk about this more on the left show yesterday, but, No, I mean, there's several good reasons to help us out. And the main one being, if you guys help us out, that empowers me to help other people that need help out. Right mm-hmm. now, you know, life has managed to stick me in a place where I can't be near as helpful as I normally am and always want to be. And it makes me grumpy, and I end up saying swear words at the poor kid working the drive-thru window, you know, because I'm just getting frustrated by life right now. But this is a good thing, and it's going to be good for a lot of people, including you, the listener. You're going to get more, you're going to get better, and you're going to have more choices in what you use from us to entertain yourselves. So you can pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and just right there, just click on it.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Well, I will also invite everybody to join us this week on Patreon, patreon.com/dfinmedia. We're going to be talking a little bit about story theft and maybe a few other tales as they come along. So that's this week on Patreon, folks, patreon.com/dfinmedia. Join our Patreon squad. Everything that it's our Patreon members that keep this show free for everyone else, the rest of you freeloaders to listen to. So stop being a freeloader and join our Patreon squad. Let's make a Patreon platoon.
Be a paid loader.
What's that?
Be a paid loader.
Be a paid loader. A payloader. Wait. I will say, as I always do, until some guy just wants to kidnap all the women from Marvel because he spends too much time online, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Gail Simone.
Woo!
All hail visible women.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, am I good?
You're good.
Okay, thanks, buddy.
I love it. Thanks, buddy.